So just some comments with respect to this conversation. So anecdotally, we do hear that those who are trying to engage in transdisciplinary research and have their findings that combine various disciplines often do have trouble. They send it to, for instance, the genetics journal, and they say, oh, this is behavioral. They send it to the behavioral journal, and they say, oh, no, this is genetics. So there is, and so what we're hearing is that the researchers feel that the most innovative transdisciplinary findings and efforts that they're doing are being showcased in symposiums, and then their work is sort of being splintered a bit in the publications. But also, with respect to some of our findings, so talking to our work is not as cross-cutting and looking at the people who are not successful, so we're focused more on the bibliometrics, but what we're finding is those who are engaged explicitly in these transdisciplinary research endeavors in the context of centers are outpacing, as far as publications, those who are doing more traditional R01 studies. So there's some preliminary findings with that respect.
You know, that's kind of interesting, the idea that the most novel work would appear in a symposium setting before it would or could appear in a journal. And I'll draw your attention to the computer science community, because they will tell you quickly that their publications that are presented at meetings are far more impactful than what appears in the big journals. And they will frequently try and argue that that's a better metric of how modern and novel work is. It's when it's accepted at meetings where the acceptance rate might be 20% or 30%, that might have a more impact and be a better index of where that person's work is valued than a publication in a traditional journal.
Go ahead. I'm Michael Warden from Colexis, but I previously was at the University of Michigan Medical School. And while I was there, we had a visiting dean come in from Penn State and talk about an organizational context for supporting and reviewing things in the right way that I thought was really interesting. And I don't know much about it, but I wondered if some of the university administration experience from Michigan State and Florida might be able to inform this a little bit. But they had an interdisciplinary decision-making process across their schools where they actually required the department leadership to participate on different strategic committees for decision-making processes. And they kind of institutionalized the decision-making process around anything of importance that crossed more than one area, that people from many different areas had to serve on different teams, and they rotated over two-year periods. And if anything it touched on, say, for example, finance and IT, then all, like a majority of the interdisciplinary teams had to vote on it. I thought it was very interesting. It sounded very heavy and complex, but the concept of somehow institutionalizing interdisciplinary leadership activities in order to create an environment that promotes interdisciplinary activities on an individual level was interesting. And do you know about anyone else doing that or any experience? Because it'd be nice to have the administration not depend on every individual person learning these things and internalizing interdisciplinary principles on their own, but instead having the administration itself structure it in that way.
So yeah, that's really fascinating. I visited Penn State, and I also thought it was pretty heavy. The only thing I've seen that's analogous is I've seen deans change roles before. I'll be dean of your college for 6 months while you be dean of my college for 6 months. It's a very bold thing to do, but boy, it will teach you quickly what's going on in the other disciplines. Again, not directly to your point, but similar.
All right, so my question is for Dr. Jones. Nancy, in thinking about evaluation and assessment, two questions. One about who should measure what? Should institutions and funding agencies be measuring the same thing? I've often thought that institutions should measure the outputs, and the funding agencies could be have the responsibilities of measuring the outcomes, and those are different. But then moving back to the institutional perspective, your recommendations may be on policy for institutional resources that are needed to invest towards evaluating interdisciplinary research on team science, and then what outputs we should be focusing on, and you know, what is it we should be measuring. So any guidance you can offer, I think, might be particularly useful, not just to myself, but to a lot of others in the audience.
Wow, this is really hard. I think it is really hard, but I do think that, you know, performance measurement is here to stay. I think that the people who are the practitioners really need to understand how they want to be evaluated. You're the ones who really are the ones that can help inform what you do, and be careful what you measure, because it will impact behavior. And so if you only measure publications or citations, then of course we all know people game, you know, journals game, departments game. But then what are you going to lose by measuring that? So I really think that universities need to start thinking more about, I had conversations with different people, the things that aren't measurable in some of the ways that we measure, and to really say what we do, why does it have value, and not be so, you know, unidirectional, like to explain what the value is of having, you know, space in your day to actually have conversations, to explain, you know, what you do, you know, like if to me, I feel like, you know, science and medicine is trying to be industrialized. And so there are points that we really can improve what we do. But if we're too static and too, you know, like best practiced oriented, then we limit creativity, we limit spontaneity. We also don't recognize the important thing about that sometimes it's also individuals that are the key factor that drive different things. So, like, to me, you know, like we, you know, and think I have an ethics background too. So what's interesting is that sometimes we want to look for the one thing, but by doing that, then what do we lose? You know, like that there's actually this boundary of wonderful things that all are good, and there are different reasons why they're good. And so, like, when we try to press it too hard into the mold, then we lose a lot of different things. But then that means that you have to be comfortable more with qualitative information, which, of course, in the biomedical community, we disdain qualitative information until we're the qualitator, because the experts are the only one who can value what the hard data mean. But then the other part is then we resist this. You know, like, I think there's some cultural points that are there that you know, we think that we're the only ones who really understand what we do. Well, then you have to be the person who says what it is, and also be the one who takes the responsibility to improve what you're doing. And I find, like, that we're not always there. You know, we're not always willing. And again, you know, like, I've been a faculty member, and it's, you're in a survival mode in many ways. You know, the demands are getting higher and higher in terms of what you're accountable for. So you don't have time to really be a faculty member anymore. So I think then you need to argue what that was. You need to say, you need to change the conversation about what things are really valuable, and do a picture of this rather than this and this. You know, I think we're too reductionist in our approach, and we haven't really defined the system of what we add to the community. Well, because then you have, I'm really seeing this on the national level, is that people want best practices, and they want, we really have bought into the franchise mode. And then, so what are we gonna lose if we franchise? And so I guess I would say that the thing though that we've had the difficulty even at NIAID is that we have had the same problem with people not being able to communicate. Like, the evaluators didn't understand what they were evaluating, and they came up with systems that did lose a lot. You know, like, so, you know, we're going to count publications, the evaluators would say, and then the program officers are like, well, what does that mean? Is a publication that, you know, someone proved a theory, disproved a theory? Is it highly cited because it's a method? Is it highly cited because the person is on the study section? Well, really, what are the reasons why? And so because we haven't taken the time to actually explain what we do and how it really works, and then from that come up what are some of our priorities and goals, then we haven't been able to take the time to come up with really meaningful metrics, except for in a few exceptions.
you always cite the people on your study section, right? But, you know, if I can just interrupt you for 1 second here. I had a provost who used to say, all of us used to say, you don't know what we do. You don't know what should be measured. You don't know my field. You can't tell me, you know, what's excellent. And this provost used to say, well, then you tell me.
Absolutely.
And I'll see you next year. You tell me what is the measure of excellence in your discipline. And measure, we'll use that loosely. And then I'll see you next year.
Sure. I have a comment and a question. Many of us, whether we're doing team science or studying team science, are grant-funded or want to be or need to be. And I think, Jake, you kind of touched on this a little bit. But in a budget time where our budgets are shrinking and shrinking and evaluation in general keeps shrinking and shrinking, where do we make room in our budgets for evaluation, not only of the program that we're doing or the science that we're doing, but of the way that we're doing it?
Well, that's a good question. That's a general problem for evaluators all the time. I think the main thing is you have to think about what is the most likely outcome that you're looking to assess. You have to be pretty specific about what you can measure with a limited budget. So if you have a theory of change and you expect certain outcomes, particularly if you use a logic model for your research work, then in some ways that you can target your resources towards, you can at least assess those things and try to do it by looking at the entire process, the outputs as well as the outcomes. If you're just kind of taking a lot of money and looking at the high impact things that you're hoping to find, but it's not linked as a likelihood of your theory, well, then it's not going to make a whole lot of sense to do it that way.
So. Can I make a comment? I'm on a project with an extremely difficult evaluation challenge, let's say. It's a project that brings together historically black universities and colleges and R1 universities. And it's supposed to promote robotics education and to bring students into computer science and robotics from colleges where they may have, you know, very poor students. In fact, we've had students come where we had to pay their bus fare. I mean, they couldn't make it at all without a lot of support that wasn't actually written into the grant. We've now been told that we have to spend 20% of a budget on evaluation, and there has become an industry of evaluation experts. I mean, these companies are all over the place, and they have expertise, and they tell the scientists, you know, we use a logic model, and we use, you know, this and that, and they demand an awful lot of data. And it has some good and bad effects, but it forces the project to think about, well, what can we really say about what we're going to do? And it's not just the activities we're going to be doing, which is the traditional way of, okay, we had 20 students come to REU, you know, summer camp, and we had another 40 students in classes. It's not at that level. It's how many students entered graduate school, how many actually graduated. So these are longer, it's going to be a lot longer term than the project itself to actually evaluate. But they have yearly reports, or sometimes they're asked to come to the funding agency and report every 6 months. And they have site visits in which they have to show progress. And it's extremely difficult to have these very high standards of evaluation and yet ask these people on the project to do things in the short term. Mm-hmm. Very hard.
I'm sorry Teresa Woodruff wasn't able to stay this afternoon. Let me share with you, though, her thought process as they embarked on the U54 proposal. There was no limitation against using direct funds towards evaluation, but they decided that if there was ever any hope of being able to get renewed IRC funding or to get funding to further the project beyond an IRC award, there was going to need to be evaluation that's done. And so I thought she was extremely wise for having that kind of foresight. She did take into consideration and partnered with our colleague, now share contractor, and they set to the task of thinking about formative versus summative evaluation. And if there's money to be spent and we only have a little bit of it and we want the maximum impact of thinking about formative evaluation, not something that just comes at the end, but a kind of evaluation that allows you to make mid-course corrections or mid-course improvements, opportunities to say, you know, we've been doing things right, but we can do things even more right. We can make ourselves even better. And so I think when there's opportunities in the way Teresa and her team and Noshir and his team coming together to say, how are we going to best do this? There'll be evaluation for evaluation's sake and for reporting and for metrics and being able to show others, but that they wanted to be able to take advantage of the output, the reporting of that evaluation for the purposes of doing the oncofertility science and the outcomes on health and opportunities for women being served by the program, make those things better. And so I think there's an opportunity to think about formative versus summative evaluation then.
I guess I want to say just a few things too. And one is that it's really important to recognize for the people who are working in this field that your work, people are looking for to be exported into making decisions. So, you know, like, be careful how you report it. You know, you have an obligation to report it, but make sure you understand what the impact is of how you're going to report it, because people are looking at ways to assess science. But that being said, you know, like, if you understand how the agencies work, as you were given advice to do, you know, they also have to be able to justify against many wonderful needs, strategies, and ways of giving funding. So it behooves you to think that this is also an important activity and not a dilution of the science, but actually a step that will improve the science, and also one very important step of the science is being able to justify it. And so, you know, like, taking time to think through that this actually, you know, you're giving arguments for your program officers to be able to go against all the other wonderful ways to spend the money, why this is a wise investment, and why, you know, centers grants or why team science initiatives, you know, and what it contributes to the field. So if you don't do it, then we're left for, you know, if somebody else comes up with compelling data, then you have a hard time actually justifying. So think of it as part of your professional activities. And I think it is coming against a culture that, you know, like, the product is the end point, rather than, and denies that, you know, part of scientific professionalism is beyond just conducting the experiment. You know, so it's coming against some of that thing that, you know, like, I think the evaluation can be, you know, really important, or, you know, part of an evaluation. It teaches you how to think about your program and your activities and what, you know, what your outcomes are going to be. So even just that process, you're better able to articulate what your aims and goals are by some of those processes. So you should think of it as your professional activity.
I just have a quick comment / proposal. I mean, Janie, you said that you could talk for 2 weeks about your talk, and I honestly could probably listen to you for 2 weeks to talk about what you were talking about. And I'm just curious if there's any other university administrators or leaders that are having kind of similar issues that we at GW are having in terms of institutional blocks to this process that maybe want to connect and see if we can knock our heads together and figure out how to make those changes and see what successful universities have done to do that. So I just throw that out there.